My next guest is one of the most influential people in Australian cinema, but he doesn't live here and he's not even Australian. He is an Italian by the name of Paolo Bertolin, and he is one of the sets of eyes and ears on the ground for the two most important film festivals in the world. He is a consultant who works for the Venice Film Festival, and more recently he's also become one of the programming team on the Director's Fortnight at the Cannes Film Festival. And every year around this time he comes over to take a look at what our filmmakers have coming down the pipe, and it's my absolute pleasure to have him join me in the studio. He's kindly found time for us in his busy schedule, just off the plane from New Zealand, en route back home, which I think is Thailand these days.
No, actually, I'm heading to Finland now, so it's actually quite a crazy itinerary. I'm heading off to another festival above the Arctic Circle, so it's going to be a very, very long journey, but I had some time, and I thought it was nice to be here.
So Finland.
And thanks for the flattering introduction.
You are an influential person, aren't you? I mean, do you feel the weight of responsibility on your shoulders as someone who has a say over what gets
bit,
in?
A little bit, in the sense that as someone who first and foremost is a big champion of Australian cinema, having the opportunity and, let's put it in between,
in quotation marks,
the power to highlight or bring to the stage of Cannes and Venice certain films, I'm aware that there is a certain burden connected to what I'm doing, because oftentimes there are films that I like, that I want to support, and filmmakers whose talent I think deserves to be brought to the international scene. And sometimes it doesn't work as it should or as I wish.
You mean your opinion gets overridden by?
Well, it happens because it's actually a committee kind of work, both in Cannes and in Venice. I'm the one who is championing this Australian films, and then there is a committee and there is a director who have the final say. And sometimes we agree, sometimes we don't. But. In recent years, I must say, I wouldn't complain at all, because the key films that we have been presenting in the main competition of Venice, like Sweet Country, Warwick Thornton's Sweet Country, and Jennifer Kent's The Nightingale, were exactly the kind of films and the kind of statements about Australian cinema that I really believed would make sense for us and for the current production of films here.
What do you see as Australian cinema's strength?
Well, I think there are many things out there that are quite exciting about Australian cinema these days. On the one hand, there is a nice surge of new talents. I don't know if we can call it a new wave, because it hasn't been hailed as that, but certainly in the last 6 or 7 years, there was a constant renewal, new directors making their first feature films, others moving on to their second with a quite skilled but also surprising way of approaching the cinematic language that in a way might have not met with the right kind of response here in Australia, but that was noticed internationally.
Well, who are you talking about? Which directors in
particular? Well, I'm thinking about directors like the ones that I just mentioned, like Warwick Thornton or Jennifer Kent, but also someone like Emil Cortin Wilson, who is more on the fringe, more independent and close to documentary in his approach. But he's definitely...
You brought Hale to...
Yes, exactly. Both Hale
to Venice.
And Ruin to Venice. After that, I think, regardless... of the Venice, the specific Venice thing, I think there have been other directors that have been playing either in Cannes or Berlin that left a mark. For instance, I'm pretty sure that the new director, and now I have a blank because I don't remember his name, but this year in Berlin, there was a new film called Buoyancy. It's another first feature film that I thought was really, really strong. I don't think it played in Australia yet, because it's a MIFF film, so it will premiere in Melbourne.
Yes.
But I must tell Australian audiences to please go and watch it when it is playing in Melbourne. And also maybe in general, as an encouragement, I would encourage Australian audiences to watch more Australian films because actually they're better than they think they are. And
do you find that if we're traveling around the world, though, that the local audiences don't think that their national cinema is as good as what, you know, foreign audiences think it is?
It depends on the countries. Mm. I think Australian audiences are particularly disillusioned about their own cinema. I don't know why this is happening, but I feel that actually, I mean, of course, my gaze on Australian cinema is the one of a foreigner. It's an external gaze, but I find it extremely provocative sometimes, especially because, and I wanted to get to this point earlier, at this very moment in time, Australian cinema is one that is really bringing into the conversation the aesthetics and the narratives, the traumas of the past. As you see, both Sweet Country and The Nightingale and some upcoming films are dealing with the colonial past of the country, and they're doing so by tracing back the issues related to the indigenous people, but also to gender, to women and...
Well, The Nightingale's yet to come out here, and that certainly is both, that intersection of gender and the colonial past. Do you feel when you come to Australia, as you regularly do, you know, representing both the Cannes Film Festival and the Venice Film Festival, when you see Australia at street level, do you wonder why there are certain films not being made? I mean, do you see that there are certain gaps in the sorts of films we make?
I don't think there are really gaps. Perhaps the one thing is that certain kinds of cinema, certain strands of cinema are not as visible or recognized as others. Obviously, the films that aim at a larger audience or are trying to reach for the other side of the Pacific, because it looks like there are many Australian films that are intended to break into the American market. Mm-hmm. Those are the most visible ones. Those are the ones that also Australian audiences recognize the most. But then I would say that there are more fringe filmmakers like Emil Corti Wilson that I mentioned mm-hmm. earlier, that are doing quite extraordinary works that are less visible. Also, I would like to mention a film that Venice somehow produced through one of its workshops, Strange Colors.
Strange Colors was fantastic.
Yeah, Alena Lotkina, yes. She's also a fantastic new voice. I would say that it's interesting for me as an outsider. Maybe I have a perspective that is a bit biased on this divide, but it's interesting to see how the Sydney films are the ones that are more oriented towards the US and the American market, whereas, for example, the Melbourne films and the Melbourne filmmakers like Courtin Wilson or Lotkina, they are more European-like. They have this taste that is quite unique, and they seem to somehow go against what the prescriptions of making a good commercial films are at this very moment in time.
If we're talking about the modern era, I guess you could trace back the modern era and the relationship of the Cannes Film Festival to Australian cinema back to the way that it celebrated and helped launch Jane Campion, who, you know, is a sort of hybrid filmmaker in terms of she's sort of New Zealand Australian sort of British filmmaker. But in a meaningful way was sort of formed in Australia. Have we produced, do you think, a director as important as Jane Campion?
I think exactly the two. I'm sorry if I keep going back to those two names, but in a way, I am quite confident that Warwick Thornton is an incredible new voice in world cinema, in the whole world, because he's bringing a very specific kind of aesthetics to the visual and the narrative presentation. I think that both Sansom and Delilah and Sweet Countries were excellent films that were challenging the audience towards the ways they see narrative and the way to present history and the characters. In the same way, I find Jennifer Kent's voice extremely unique as well, because she's taking genre elements. I mean, she's working with genre cinema. I mean, The Babadook was actually a horror film. The Nightingale is a Western. You can see it as an Australian Western.
It's also a rape revenge film, you could argue, as well. Sort of subgenre.
I mean, she's working with the tropes of genre, but then weaving them together with something that is extremely personal, something that is also a bit dark and disturbing. I mean, I'm totally aware that many audiences respond in a negative way to her films, but this was also what was happening with the very first film by Jane Campion. Sweetie had a very controversial presentation in Cannes exactly 30 years ago in 1989. So the kind of divisive reaction that Jennifer's films might have in a way reflect what was happening at the beginning of Jane Campion's career.
The Nightingale, of course, had a very strong reaction to it when it was screened at the Venice Film Festival. Were you surprised it had that very strong reaction? I guess from what you're saying, you're not surprised.
No, I wasn't at all, in the sense that when I went I went to see it again when it played in Venice in the press screening, the first press screening, which was completely packed, this huge 1,200 seaters was completely full. And to be honest, I hope Jennifer is not offended if I mention this, but to be honest, when I was there, I was thinking, okay, I will enjoy the film, but I have to be ready that maybe at the end there will be some boos and strong reactions. And there was this kind of divisive reaction at the end, a little bit more than I expected, but there was also a very strong applause.
Well, Australian audiences will have a chance, and they're having a chance to see this film at the Sydney Film Festival, but also it will be in release within weeks in Australia. Paolo Bertolin, you're here at the invitation of Screen Australia, but presumably you're meeting with producers and directors and filmmakers. Can you tell, I mean, people often talk about, directors actually, in my experience, often talk about knowing if a filmmaker is talented, being able to see that within the first couple of minutes of a film. How does talent manifest itself when you're watching as a programmer or a selector a new work? I mean, how do you ascertain that, yes, there's talent behind the screen here?
It is a very sensitive question because, you see, even assessing talent, assessing the quality of a film is something that is entirely subjective. And me, as anybody else doing this job, we are fallible. We might make mistakes. It might happen that you can feel from the very beginning that a film, oh, this is something that is a major discovery. But I would say that it is a very, very delicate and sensitive matter. I mean, I'm still enthusiastic enough to think that I can find this kind of spark in films and in directors.
When was the last time you found that spark?
A few days ago, here. Wow. I thought I saw a first feature film that I really liked, and I thought, oh, wow, this director is able to turn what was a quite ordinary and not so brilliant pitch into something else. It elevate, I mean, the talent of the director and of course the direction of the actors elevated a concept that on paper sounded quite blah.
any names?
I cannot say. Yeah. This is something that will come up in the next few months. But the good side of it is that it's a woman filmmaker. Once again, I mean, this is another thing that probably is interesting about Australia, the fact that there is so much support towards Indigenous filmmakers and women filmmakers. At this very moment in time, it's relevant and it makes sense.
Tell me about quotas, which of course is a very vexed question for the big festivals. Cannes and Venice, the ones you represent. Do you believe in quotas at the festival level? Because I mean, you as a selector, you're having to judge things on the basis of artistic merit, and there could be an argument to say that quotas work well in the education of filmmakers and perhaps in the employment of filmmakers, but not in the sort of adjudicating of artistic merit.
I think the role of festivals is put to a test at this very moment in this regard, and we are trying our best because we are conscious about this problem. But it's also true that we are coming like at the very end of the line. I mean, we are the most visible point where the problem arises, but the root of the problem is much much earlier on in terms of education, whether there are women who are accessing film schools, whether there are women who can have the dream of being filmmakers, because, you know, I'm working with countries like India or Southeast Asia, where virtually finding a woman filmmaker is very, very hard. So it is good that societies, advanced societies like Australia or Scandinavia or Switzerland, have implemented systems that are allowing for more female voices to find their space. But at the same time, one has to be aware that the whole rest of the world might be more complicated to deal with. And that's why we find ourselves also confronted to this question, whether we want to have quotas for female directors that would also entail a problem of geographical imbalance.
Paolo Bertolin, it's been a pleasure having you in on the screen
show. Thank you so much.
That's Paolo Bertolin, who is a member of the programming committee of the Directors' Fortnight at the Cannes Film Festival and also a consultant with the Venice Film Festival. My name's Jason DeRosso. You are listening to The Screen Show.